It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Chandler Gould. Chandler is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers. Great to see you.
Good to see you, and it's I always enjoy being on your show.
You know, when we talk about what's going on right now in Washington, D.C., it's a real workout right now in D.C. With the committee hearings, the subcommittee hearings, and a lot of issues that are affecting agriculture. And going to start with one, because it's kind of tied over to trade, the Market Facilitation Program. Even though that doesn't necessarily come through Congress, you go a little further down the street, it does come from USDA. 2.0, what do we know?
Well, what we do know is that the USDA is working very hard to make sure that the program they put out does not distort any planting decisions. So what I read between the lines there, that means that they can't put out the formulas or actually what they're going to do until after June 30th, which is basically the cutoff date for soybeans. But what they've also done is they've put out enough information to let us know that each individual county is going to be assessed on eligible commodities. And then each individual county, and I don't know how many counties we have in the United States. I mean, I know Texas has 250-something. So if you multiply that across, you know, 49 other states, that's a lot of counties. If each individual county is going to have a different rate, what I'm very concerned about is we're going to have regionality. I'm concerned that if you're in a county that only is predominantly just in one commodity, so let's talk about our drier regions like in the Pacific Northwest where they only grow wheat, I fear they're going to get a lower rate than if you're in the Midwest where you've got a soybean, corn, maybe even a wheat rotation. It's become pretty clear that if you're in a heavy soy county, you're going to have a higher rate. And if you're in a heavy corn or wheat county, you're going to have a lower rate. And I think this we're going to be penalizing farmers who are not in heavy soybean counties. And so that's a major concern that we've got and have asked the department about that and a few other questions that I'd like to go over.
Sure. And this comes on the heels of the first MFP round of payments where we didn't really see a number that maybe some of the other commodities did.
We didn't. In the last one, we saw 14 cents a bushel. Along with U.S. wheat, did some calculations and really felt that our numbers should have been closer to about 70 cents. And one of the things that we have been very clear with the department on is that you cannot look at trade in a vacuum. You cannot just look at what's happening with China. So the additional tariffs that you added to China and then decided to do the Market Facilitation Program 2.0 also slowed down USMCA. Well, USMCA is very important to wheat growers because Mexico is our largest export market. So we felt that it's more fair to all producers to look at all of the multiple ripple effect that these tariffs, even the threat with Mexico, which has now been lifted, but still cause some concerns in calculating those rates. But the other two big questions we have in the wheat industry is, what do you do about winter wheat? Because it's planted in 18 and harvested in 19. And what do you do about those wheat farmers who are practicing either voluntary or mandatory conservation programs to, you know, enrich their soils and decrease runoff? So if they do fallow wheat, if they had fallow in 2018, does that mean they're not going to be eligible for any help through this program? We have written a very detailed letter to the USDA outlining these concerns and are still waiting for a response.
Glad you mentioned winter wheat, because makes me think of harvest and the progress that's being made there. I think the custom harvesters maybe are through Central Texas now. Are you hearing anything at all on the harvest side, and any reports back?
Well, I know that our current national president, Ben Scholes from Levon, Texas, is actually in the field today harvesting. So evidently his wheat is ready to go and we're moving north. I think we're going to see spots of pretty good wheat as we continue to head north. But then, of course, we're going to go through that very wet zone where they just, you know, Kansas and Nebraska. And I feel so sorry for those states. Half the time they're asking for rain, and now they've got so much of it that I think we are going to see a decrease in quality. We're also going to see a decrease in planting of spring wheat in South Dakota. I think that's going to be much smaller. But then moving out west, though, back into the PNW, I think we're going to have some very good yields. A lot of acres are going to be coming out. But of course, they won't start harvesting at least for another 4 to 6 weeks, depending on when the warmer weather comes in to help ripen up that crop. But I think we're going to have an average year as the United States as a whole. Unfortunately, our biggest wheat belt, though, is going to have a lot of preventive plant for spring wheat, and I think we're going to have a few quality issues in some of our larger states like Kansas.
When I think of the PNW, I also think of the ability to move our products back and forth using rail, and that brings up the idea of infrastructure. You know, we keep hearing infrastructure being important, but don't quite see any movement yet from Congress.
You know, it in the 11 years I worked on the Hill and the almost 10 years I've been off the Hill, we have only moved one major infrastructure bill, and it still wasn't very comprehensive. When you look at our rail system, you look at the barge and river system, just the updates that we need to do on locks and dams on the Mississippi. When you look at single rail and captive rail issues as we head west to our larger ports, whether it be in Portland or Vancouver, Washington, to move a lot of our wheat products off of there, a lot of those ports also need to be updated. And then, you know, we're also looking into there's a possibility of some labor issues again out there on the port side. But then if you look at the other larger issue of what consumers and transportation people want, you know, high-speed rail is something we've talked about for years and years and years. But when you talk to the railroad companies, the billions and billions of dollars it would take just to update our tracks so that we could even run those type of trains, because we have to share those tracks for commercial and for passenger. We are so far behind, I don't know that we have enough money to update it. So we're going to have to make a choice of how do we balance out passenger train and commercial train, but yet be able to keep commercial rail at a reasonable cost so that it doesn't drive up the cost of production to where we can't actually move our products.
And you mentioned a great point there, because your biggest export market is Mexico. And since the privatization of the railroads there, you're able to move cars in and out pretty easily. You do much changing on this side of the border, and you could mess that up.
Most definitely. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is we send rail cars of wheat down to Mexico, I mean, every day, not just cars, trains down there. And it's not just wheat, it's other commodities, corn is heading down there, and dairy and a bunch of other products that are coming back and forth. But if we don't continue to build out our infrastructure to make sure that we can connect the processing plants, the food companies, the consumer, and the farmer, and our export markets, I think we're really going to start seeing other major countries like Brazil, Argentina, the Black Sea area. If those countries ever get their infrastructure into place where they can move product faster, they are going to price us out of the world market. And that is why infrastructure funding and an overhaul here in the United States is not only important for our export markets, but it's important for our passengers, and it's important for us to be able to maintain a lower cost of production.
Part of the challenge may be, though, identifying where will you put the money? Or will it go into rail? Will it go into your waterways, or another hot topic, broadband.
You know, broadband has so many important aspects, especially when you get further out. You know, if you're out there around Sharon Springs, Kansas, or out in Wyoming, where we have quite a few wheat growers, you are dependent on, if not two-way radio, but also low television. I can't remember the exact name of it, but broadband is the way you get your weather updates. It's the way you get emergency alerts from the National Weather Centers. And we've got so many underserviced areas right now with broadband. You know, the USDA wants you to sign up for your farm programs on the computer. They want you to sign up on NRCS on the computer. And we have got farmers, I know a lot of people don't believe this in the city, that are still on dial-up because they do not have access to high-speed internet. And so building out the broadband wire network is crucial, and not only for communication, but for us to make sure that we can provide timely information, not only on markets, but to inform our growers on what's going on. And really the most important thing right now for them is the weather. And when your TV station goes out and that's all you have, broadband is the other way that we can continue to communicate.
And you mentioned that Northwest area, and finally here, a report out of APHIS recently of a finding of some GE wheat, kind of a surprise that it popped up. This doesn't appear, though, that it was a cultivated field, does it?
No, it does not. And we're limited on the information that we know right now. APHIS has been on the ground. We do know that they have samples. The few things that we do know is that it was a fallow field, that it was volunteer wheat, and we are still in the process of, or APHIS is still in the process of identifying the event itself to see if it is an event that our international trading partners are already aware of or if it is something new. So right now we are in a holding pattern until we get that information back, but we have full confidence not only in our certified programs of where we can do testing, but also in the ability for APHIS to figure out which event this is so we can continue to move wheat out of the U.S., but also not to disrupt our own market here. The one key thing that they have continued to say and to verify is that they do know that none of it has entered the food system or food supply chain, which is good. So the next question is, what event is it and how did it get there?
Always good to see you. Thanks for your work. If we want to follow the wheat growers online, where do we find?
Wheatworld.org.
Wheatworld.org. Chandler Gould is president, CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, and joins us on today's AgriBusiness Report.